Hello.
Okay, awesome. So thank you for that introduction. So yes, my name is Tierra Willey, and hopefully I just want to talk to you a little bit today about some of the research I'm doing in my program. So I do want to say that I have no relationships to disclose. So we've seen these infographs, right? So these are infographs created by the CDC that takes really complex research findings and like describes them in a way that's easy to understand. So we know that violence occurs or starts at a young age. We know that there's a high prevalence rate of violence and trauma amongst our children in the United States. And we also know that the adolescent pregnancy rate, even though it has decreased over the years, still remains high in the United States. And so my question is, what about the intersection of these things? So what about violence experiences for adolescent parents? What infographs do we have that represent and describe their unique experiences? And so my hope today is that we'll be able to really start to disentangle and like start to understand these experiences. So before we can do that, we got to define what polyvictimization is. So for the purposes of this study, we looked at four different types of physical or sexual violence that adolescent parents may have experienced. So this is prior intimate partner violence, which is violence perpetrated by an intimate partner in a previous relationship. We have family violence, which is violence experienced by family members. So that can be a sibling, that could be a parent. We identified community violence as violence that occurred in the context of one's community by a stranger or by an acquaintance. And then last was peer violence, which was violence perpetrated by a friend or by a youth. And so the question is, why is polyvictimization? Why is it important? Why do we care? Well, the research tells us that polyvictimization, this kind of like co-occurrence of multiple types of violence, is actually pretty high among adolescents. And that experiencing polyvictimization can lead to poor health outcomes, such as mental health, substance use, delinquency. And so the question that we have today is there a relationship between polyvictimization and parenting? And what we were particularly interested in was, does polyvictimization impact an adolescent parent's like involvement with raising their child and caring for their child? Does it impact their expectations of what it will be like being a parent? And also thinking about what their individual experiences are as a parent as well. And so we wanted to focus on adolescent parents for a number of reasons. Like I had mentioned before, the pregnancy rate in the United States is actually higher for adolescent parents than any other Western industrialized nation. So if you kind of think about it like in a broad spectrum, the adolescent parents, from my view at least, are an important large population within the United States. We also know that having children at a very young age can lead to vulnerabilities such as stress, poverty, low education attainment. And then when you think about parenting and violence in particular, we know that parents, particularly adult parents, but we know that parents who experience violence may also use abuse amongst their own children, may have maladaptive parenting practices. But at the same time, we know that positive parenting behaviors can protect children from future abuse. And so this is some of the reasons why we're really interested in parenting behaviors. So two research questions that we tried to tackle, I moved too fast, are what are the patterns of polyvictimization among adolescent parents? And then do these parenting behaviors, do they differ among by the latent class of parents? And so what we did was our study was a prospective cohort study of 296 couples. They were followed from pregnancy to 12 months postpartum. We captured lifetime violence victimization was assessed at their kind of like their initial interview. And then the parenting behaviors was assessed then at 6 months postpartum. And so some sample demographics, we actually had a pretty diverse sample when you look at race and ethnicity. More than a third of our females and our males in our sample identified as either Black or Hispanic. It was a pretty young sample. Females were a little bit younger than the males. And then when you look at education was actually pretty similar between males and females as well. So to tackle the first question, trying to identify are there patterns, and if there are patterns, where are they? We used latent class analysis. So latent class analysis gives us this opportunity to take these scales that we measured, in particularly these four types of violence, we measured those, and we asked the question, are there subgroups of adolescents based off of their experiences of victimization? And latent class analysis allows us to kind of examine what those classes or what those subgroups are. And so this is what we found. We found that there were three classes, when you look at victimization, three classes for females. And so the way that we kind of like, not necessarily categorized, but the way that we identified the groups was that if the probability of someone in that group experiencing violence was 0.5 or higher, that was how we labeled the groups. So if you see to the far left, that we have a no violence victimization group because individuals in that group had less than a 0.5 likelihood of experiencing any type of violence. But then we look at the middle group, and this is for females, we see that for prior IPV and for peer violence, it was 0.9 and 1. So members of this group were more likely to endorse that, yes, I experienced prior IPV, and yes, I experienced peer violence. And then the third class was a prior IPV and community violence group, so they were more likely to say, yes, I experienced prior IPV, and I also experienced community violence. And then when we look at males, there's a three-class model as well for the males. And so there's a no victimization group, but then when you look in the middle, there's a prior IPV group. So young men in this group said, yes, I'm more likely to experience prior IPV. And then our third class, was what we call the high polyvictimization group, because all of these males were all more likely to experience all four forms of violence. So then our second question was, now that we know what these subgroups or these classes are, do parenting behaviors, are they significantly different between these three classes for females and for males? So use the NOVAs to figure that out. Okay. And so what we did was we used ANOVAs, and what we found was that for the male's high polyvictimization class compared to the other two classes, so compared to the no violence class, compared to the prior IPV class, these males were less likely to be involved in raising their child. So they reported like low parental involvement. These males also had more negative experiences with parenting their child. They also had more negative expectations for what it was going to be like to be a parent as well. When you look at the females and you compare the prior IPV peer violence class to the other two classes, the non-violence class and the community violence prior IPV class, we find that the females in the prior IPV peer violence group felt that their partner was not involved in raising their child. They also had more negative experiences with parenting their child, and they also expected parenting to be very difficult as well. So what are the future implications of this work? So my suggestion, of course, based off of this work, is that we need to be doing more violence screenings, not just for one type of violence for adolescents, but multiple types of violence. So community violence, intimate partner violence, peer violence, family violence. We really need to be screening for all those types of violences. We also need to be integrating violence-related services as well into adolescent-friendly settings. So whether there's clinical settings, whether there's community programs, wherever adolescent, especially adolescent and young parents are at, we really need to be integrating those kind of services that focus on violence. And additional research is needed. We need to explore why experiences of violence lead to poor or low parenting behavior. So at this time, I just want to acknowledge the partner study team who collected this data, and my mentor and the PI for the study, Dr. Trace Kershaw, as well, my co-authors and our funding sources for the data. And I just want to thank you for being to listening to my presentation.
I'm nervous. Yes, very interesting presentation. I have a question. You mentioned at the beginning there may be some positive aspects of parenting that would come out of the exposure to violence, that they would do more with their children to protect them. Did you find any such things?
So that's study two. It's to kind of look at the protective and resiliency that kind of like helps that relationship.
Okay.
Not yet, but in the future.
Great work.
Thank you.
I'm a maternal fetal medicine specialist, and I hear a lot of young parents want to see. And I'm wondering if you have any data or ability to get data on perinatal outcomes for these couples, because violence is thought to be perhaps a mediator on the pathway to preterm birth and long gestational age outcomes, which we know is a significant health disparity in especially African American communities. And I think it would be, since you have such a well characterized population, particularly with the different types of violence, it'd be fascinating to look at things like prematurity, low birth weight, if you say, or collaborate.
So one of the great things about this study is that the adolescent and young parents were recruited at OBGYN clinics and an ultrasound clinic. So we actually do have information on low birth weights and other kind of like birth outcomes. So yes, that's the idea for paper study 3. Thank you.